it is time for the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. Now, my name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the two important words that you need to know is animation and podcast, which means that this is a podcast that goes into animation, and only animation and nothing else. However, if you can ask someone if this is the politics podcast, then they could be right on that. No, but seriously though, in terms of the news that I got for you, it's mainly gonna be about animation. For example, in this one, we're gonna be looking into the full cast of the live-action remake of The Lion King. Then afterwards, we will be looking into another cast, but this time it's going to be for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle series. Then right afterwards, we will be having a chat with Genndy Tartakovsky on Samurai Jack, or someone already did the chat for me, so we're just going to be highlighting some of the moments on what he talked about in Samurai Jack. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the brand new title of the next Hayao Miyazaki film, and then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check things out, you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And the first story that I'm going to talk with you guys about today is going to be regarding the live-action remake of The Lion King. And yes, I say that this is going to be the live-action remake mainly because of trolling purposes. Because I know there are a significant few out there that actually get a little cringy and they kind of get triggered a little bit when they would hear the words live action regarding this, and they would make an argument that, no, this is an animated movie, it's going to be photorealistic, but in all seriousness, listen, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but unless you were actually at this year's D23 Expo, and you actually saw the footage of Jon Favreau's The Lion King, you really don't have any visual proof that this is going to be a photorealistically animated feature in the veins of something like Walking with Dinosaurs. So, again, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but you don't really have any proof. So, I'm just going to keep calling it the live-action remake of The Lion King because you look cute when you're angry. Okay, no, but seriously though, this week Disney actually made the huge announcement that they have revealed the full cast of the live-action remake of The Lion King. Now, we already know a good chunk of it, but now we know the complete cast of who's going to be in it, who are going to be the essential characters that we have to keep an eye on. And the new ones that they have announced is going to be regarding the hyenas, the young versions of the main characters, and the big one, who is going to be playing Nala. So before I get into the new guys, let's have a little recap of who's already in the cast that we know. So of course, we know that Donald Glover is going to be Simba. Then we know that Chiwetel Ejiofor is going to be Scar. And then there's Alfred Woodard, who's going to be Sarabi, Simba's mom. Then of course, we have John Oliver playing the role of Zazu. After that, we got John Connie as Rafiki. And we also have Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner that are going to play the comedic duo of Pumbaa and Timon respectively. And then, of course, the big one that people are really excited to see is the comeback of James Earl Jones reprising his role as Mufasa. So, with all that said, let us get into the new ones that Disney has announced. So, the first ones is going to be regarding young Simba and young Nala, which in this case is going to be played by J.D. McCrary, and Shahadi Wright Joseph. Now, both of them are going to be playing Simba and Nala as kids, respectively. So hopefully they got a good singing voice for when I Can't Wait to Be King comes along. Then afterwards, we got the hyenas, where we have Florence Kasumba playing as Shenzi, Eric Andre as Azizi, and Keegan-Michael Key playing as Kamari. But then we got the big one. Who's going to be playing Nala? Well, apparently the rumors are officially true. It's been long talked about that this could be the case, but now it's actually real, that Queen Bee herself, Beyoncé, is going to be playing the role of Nala. So chances are you're going to hear one hell of a sweet rendition of Can You Feel the Love Tonight. Now, it's actually very interesting when talking about the cast itself, because I was honestly kind of surprised to see that there have been a lot of mixed reactions. Now, of course, you do have the typical ones that would keep on going where people really just want to see the original cast return, where there are a lot of people that are mad that either Jeremy Irons is not back as Scar, or that Rowan Atkinson is not back as Zazu. Basically, those are the people that all they want is just see a re-release of The Lion King, the original 1994 animated film, be released in theaters. That's all they want, instead of just actually a live-action remake in the veins of this. But especially with John Oliver as Zazu, I could definitely trust him playing the part well. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I mean, he's a good actor. He has proven himself pretty well in some roles, so I could trust him playing the role as Scar. But then you also have Beyoncé playing as Nala, and I was honestly really surprised to find that there are some people that are actually not happy about it. And honestly, I'm a little bit confused as to why, because the thing is with Beyoncé, she can actually be a pretty good actress. Now, I understand many of the movies that she was in was pretty crap, but honestly, when it comes to those movies, I blame the script more so than Beyoncé. I'm pretty sure that if you actually do give her a decent script, then she could actually bring out a pretty good performance. And, I mean, it's the godforsaken Lion King, so chances are the script is already going to be great, especially when you have Jon Favreau in the helm. So I'm sure that she can bring out a pretty good performance. Now, maybe it's for other reasons why people are not happy with Beyoncé in the role of Nala. Maybe it's for political purposes. Maybe it's just they're not happy over the fact that it's a singer that's playing the role. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know. But at least I'm happy with it. But then you also got the Hyenas. And I talked with a friend of mine regarding this, and that's probably the one that seems the most confusing, because it's mainly due to the fact that some of the names have actually changed. Okay, so we already have Shenzi. That's fine. But then you also got characters like Azizi and Kamari, which, if you may know, in the original animated film, the trio of hyenas, they're called Shenzi, Banzai, and Ed. Which, okay, I can understand, like, maybe switching Ed for a more African name, because honestly, nowadays, Ed feels like he has more of a connection to Ed from Ed, Edd n Eddy. I mean, even the looks are actually very similar among the two. But I don't really get why really changing Banzai. Like, do we really need to change that name for, like, I'm guessing Eric Andre would be playing the role of Banzai, or in this case, Azizi. Because, I mean, Keegan-Michael Key is well known to be to be a much more comedic actor, so I could definitely see him playing the role of Ed, or at least in this case, Kamari, I presume. Or maybe it could be the other way around, I don't really know. But, like, even though, yeah, the name change is kind of weird, but I feel like the more important part is going to be regarding the performance. Are they going to nail the spirit of the character that they would play? That is remained to be seen. If we would still see Ed and Banzai onto the film, despite being called Azizi and Kamari. So with all that said, there's nothing really much else to really discuss. So overall, now that we do see the full cast of The Lion King, it does make me rather optimistic, actually. This does feel like a pretty legitimate cast, and we do have some good recognizable names. I'm not saying, like, oh, it's good because they're popular. It's more because, like, you could feel like this is actually a pretty respected cast. These are actors that are really good at their craft. So chances are they could bring out a really good performance. And hopefully with The Lion King, we would at least get something that can be in the levels of The Jungle Book. Now, of course, there is a chance that it could pretty much sink and the movie can pretty much suck in the veins of like Maleficent or Alice in Wonderland or even Beauty and the Beast. But who knows? This could actually turn out to be something quite entertaining and it could respect the original 1994 animated feature. But yeah, chances are like maybe it's going to be forgotten after the time it's going to be released. And yeah, sure. I mean, I can definitely agree that this movie is absolutely pointless. There's no reason for this to exist, considering that the animated feature is already a classic in itself. Because here's the thing. The fate of all these live-action remakes, they're just going to be long forgotten anyways, in order for the original to still be alive and well and for Disney to keep promoting that instead of the live-action remake. I mean, everybody nowadays at least has forgotten about Maleficent because now they rather want to care more about Sleeping Beauty. And yeah, I mean, even nowadays, like, even though it is the highest grossing film of the year, nobody nowadays really cares much about the live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast, and instead, the love is now back to the original 1991 animated film as if nothing happened. And that's how it's going to be. Like, with Disney, maybe they'll remember a little bit about it, but when they're going to talk about Beauty and the Beast, they'll focus just on the animated feature. And the same thing could happen with The Lion King. Like, the remake is going to happen, and then once 2020 is going to roll along, they'll just put their focus back onto the animated film. And I mean, even if it turns out good, it could end up being like with The Jungle Book as well. I mean, yeah, that one is undeniably the best live-action remake that they have released. But, like, even nowadays, Disney is not really caring about that thing anymore, and they're putting their focus back onto the 1967 animated film. But anyways, I'm still going to remain a little bit optimistic to see what Disney has in store with this movie. And if you actually are excited to see the live action remake of The Lion King, then all you have to do is just wait until July of 2019 to see the big release. Okay, now for our next story right over here, we're going to be jumping into another cast announcement. But instead of a big movie like the live-action remake of The Lion King, we're going to be looking into the new animated series of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, as you probably know, the current series that's going on at Nickelodeon, it's about to close down, and it's going to be replaced by this new series that they have, which is called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So, if I may read a little bit on the on my source here on Collider, it has said that Nickelodeon today announced the voice cast of its all-new series, Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a reimagining, which is a 2D animated series, by the way, that follows the band of brothers as they encounter new allies and villains and discover a mystical world they never knew beneath the streets of New York City. Now, in terms of the cast right over here, they didn't really announce every single one of them, just the main cast so far. Who's going to be playing the main roles like the Turtles, April O'Neil, and Master Splinter, along with a few people that are going to be among the crew, like who's going to be the head honchos of this series. And surprisingly enough, like one major thing that really does stand out is actually the fact that this is a diverse cast, where we actually have Omar Miller from Ballers, who's going to be playing the role as Raphael. We got Ben Schwartz from Park and Recreations, who's going to play Leonardo. Josh Brenner from Silicon Valley, who's going to play Donatello. And also Brandon Michael Smith from You're the Worst, who's going to be playing Michelangelo. And on top of that, we also got Eric Bauza, who did some roles in the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, including playing Tiger Claw, he's now got a promotion where now he's going to play as Master Splinter. But the big thing about this is actually the fact that this series will feature the first ever African-American April O'Neil, who's going to be playing, who's going to be played as Cat, I'm not putting my words well together. Let me repeat that for a moment. Now, like I said before, yes, this series is going to have the first ever African-American April O'Neil, and she is going to be played by Cat Graham from The Vampire Diaries. And there's one thing that I gotta say about casting Cat Graham as April O'Neil, and there's one thing that I actually am disappointed from it, is actually the fact that she's only going to be providing her voice. This is an animated project. Because, oh my god, Cat Graham is a beautiful woman. Like, wow, she is gorgeous. I mean, this is partly why I wish this was a live-action series. She would make a phenomenal-looking April O'Neil. And may I say, I certainly do hope the talent matches the looks. Because if that were the case, she would probably be providing the best performance in here. So yeah, that's basically the main thing, or at least that's the main cast in this new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series. Now, among the crew, I just gotta say right now that I know that maybe some of you guys are going to miss having Rob Paulsen be among the cast, because the guy really is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles veteran. Not only did he voice Donatello, I believe. Donatello in the recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, but he was also in the original animated series back in 1987 as Raphael. But don't worry, guys, don't worry about Rob Paulsen, because he actually became the teacher right now, where he's now the Master Splinter of the voices. He may not be providing a voice in the series, or maybe he is, but just as a minor role. He is actually going to be a voice director. Yes, he's going to be the new voice director of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series, which is pretty much why I said that he's going to be the Master Splinter of the crew. And among the executive producers that they have, the people that are going to mainly be in charge, we actually got Ant Ward, who is a executive producer, whom beforehand was the supervising producer of the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series. And also, we have Andy Suriano, which you may know as the character designer of Samurai Jack. He's also going to be an executive producer of this. So that's pretty much the main thing about Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where we know who the cast is going to be and also the people who are going to be in charge, including Rob Paulsen, Andy Suriano, and Ant Ward. And honestly, the one cool thing that I want to mention about this is actually regarding, like I said before, that it actually shows a pretty wide range of wide range of diversity. Where this is one of those idiotic white supremacist nightmares where the white people are actually in the minority here. I mean, wouldn't that be glorious if in life the white people are all minorities? I wouldn't mind being a minority. But anyways, going back into this, we actually do have three people that are African American. And on top of that, Nickelodeon did actually show a behind-the-scenes look where we actually do see the actors in action providing their voice for the animated series. And yeah, they definitely are top-notch. They actually do a pretty good job where they actually do sound like their respective roles, where you can hear Raphael as the tough guy, you do hear Donatello as the major nerd, or at least the current nerd. It really does help that they brought in a guy from freaking Silicon Valley into it. You know, Leonardo actually does a pretty good job putting on his charm and being like kind of the leader of the group in a way. And Michelangelo, I mean, the guy, holy crap. Like, he really does have the perfect energy to play as, to play as Michelangelo, to be Mikey. And of course, you also got April O'Neil. And from what I'm hearing, she's got the guts. She could actually provide a really good performance to show April O'Neil more as, pretty strong and independent, you know, like kind of a helpful and resourceful member of the Ninja Turtles, team. But in that clip, we only know about them and that's it. That's the only thing that Nickelodeon is showing us is the acting chops that the voice actors are giving us for this series. But if there is one thing that I must say is actually going to be really interesting, is actually going to be the involvement of Andy Soriano in this series. I want to know if he also helped out in terms of designing the characters, because this guy definitely has a very unique style and has definitely proven that he could do a great job giving us some great character designs on some TV series. In fact, going back in my source here on Collider, it does present some of his credits that he has done where he has actually worked both as a character designer and a storyboard artist, where it says that he did Star Wars Clone Wars, Fairly Odd Parents, Duck Dodgers, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, the recent Mickey Mouse cartoons, Samurai Jack, the Powerpuff Girls, and so much more. So if we could see some of his style be implemented onto Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, maybe give us something a little bit in the veins of Samurai Jack, this could actually turn out to be pretty cool looking. And I mean, going from Samurai Jack to TMNT, it kind of makes sense when you do think about it. It actually does feel like a pretty smooth transition and would definitely fit well for the kind of series that it is. I mean, you can argue that Samurai Jack is technically a little bit of a more serious Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So this could definitely have the chance to actually be a great new addition to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles lineup. Who knows how it's going to go, but I have a pretty positive feeling that this could go in a pretty good direction where it could have some really interesting character designs. You already got a pretty diverse cast of pretty talented actors, and who knows how it's going to go. Like, it's going to give us something fresh, but also some familiarity at the same time, keeping the spirit of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So if you guys are excited to go and check out The Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, then all you have to do is wait until 2018 when it comes out on Nickelodeon. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about Samurai Jack, specifically what happened during the finale of it, the fifth season of Samurai Jack, which was one of the biggest television events of the year. And yes, I say that even next to stuff like Game of Thrones and Rick and Morty and so much more. It really was a huge moment seeing the comeback of Samurai Jack and him finally going back to the past and destroying Aku. Like, finally, we can finally see that moment in front of our eyes. Like, now Samurai Jack can rest. Or will he? Because Sci-Fi Wire actually had an interview with the creator, Genndy Tartakovsky, regarding everything that happened in Season 5. And going into my source on Toon Zone, it actually highlighted three of the biggest questions, or at least, or four of them, actually. Yeah, it highlighted four big questions regarding overall of Season 5 of Samurai Jack. And that includes the tone that Genndy wants to do for the entire Season 5. Like, what would be the biggest story arc? What he wished he could have done. Like, what he could have done more to the finale of Samurai Jack. How he feels about the ending. And also about the potential future of Samurai Jack. Is there even going to be a future of Samurai Jack? Now, before I continue, I just want to give out a big warning. Now, what I'm going to say is going to contain some spoilers regarding season 5 of Samurai Jack. Now, if you guys have not seen it yet and you're interested in seeing it and you don't want any more spoilers, you don't want to hear how it ends and stuff like that, then I recommend just skipping ahead. Don't listen to this part at all. But if you don't care about spoilers or you have already seen season 5 of Samurai Jack, then we can pretty much continue. Now, I just want to start things off by saying that I have seen season 5 of Samurai Jack. I've seen all 5 seasons. And yeah, back then in the early 2000s, I remember watching episodes of Samurai Jack. And season 5, I've got to say, it really is awesome. Like, I feel like Adult Swim and Genndy Tartakovsky really nailed it. And it's finally fantastic that I'm able to see Genndy Tartakovsky back into what he does best. You know, finally, like, we could take a freaking break from all the Hotel Transylvania crap and we could see him back doing what he is known for, basically making great animated series. And this is definitely the case with Samurai Jack, where it really does nail it in the visual factor and also in the action. It really is fantastic. I wouldn't say it's the best thing to ever come out of television. There are some flaws, but honestly, overall, I feel like it is definitely awesome with what the crew has done with Samurai Jack. Now, going into the questions that they have asked, one of the big ones is actually regarding what is the big story arc that Genndy wanted to do for Samurai Jack in season 5. And what Genndy stated in there, he said, "From the inception of the arc, it wasn't just about Jack going home. The story that I really was telling is regarding love, going through the ups and downs. People not knowing that's where we were heading was great. I know some people were frustrated with the romance, but that was the whole thing. We were going to have Jack fall in love for good or for bad. He's never done it to this level. The challenge to us as filmmakers and as storytellers was to see if we could make people something if we do it right." Okay, now, as much as I gave praise to season 5 of Samurai Jack, I'm just going to say right now that I actually am one of those people that's not necessarily that big of a fan of the love angle that they're trying to do with Samurai Jack and Ashi. I know it definitely has a huge fan base going on, especially they love to see the love angle with Jack and Ashi, and I know there's a lot of people who have a huge crush on Ashi, but for me, I feel like the romance aspect is definitely one of the weaker assets of Samurai Jack Season 5. I'll explain a little bit more on the main reason why a little later, but for me, I just feel like the whole romance angle, it just feels pointless. I feel like if you take away the love aspect and you just make Jack and Ashi just friends, like, nothing could change. I feel like there's nothing that the romance really added onto season 5 of Samurai Jack, to be honest. I mean, the only point that I really saw it had, and it actually added something to season 5, was the scene when Ashi was fighting with Jack, where they were in this abandoned place and then suddenly parasites were going after both of them. And apparently the parasites were eating off Ashi's clothes. And then, like, while Jack was fighting them off, he looks at her, "Ashi, you're naked!" And, like, basically you do have a little bit of this comedic, tangent between the two while they were fighting off these parasites, and Jack is trying to cover her up with his own clothes, saying, like, "I must go and protect you from me, I mean, from these parasites." You know, okay, that, I have to admit, that part was actually funny, but other than that, I feel like there's nothing really much added to the romance. I feel like there's no point to the romance. And I guess, overall, it kind of shows the weakness, not only to season 5, but also to Genndy Tartakovsky in general, because this and Hotel Transylvania really does prove that Genndy is not that great when it comes to handling romance in terms of storytelling. But I know there might be some people that could be mad at me for saying that, in the veins of how there were a lot of people that really got pissed off at me over the fact that I criticized the animation of Hotel Transylvania. In fact, I feel like on that asset, I know how Jack felt. Like, I'm just going to be standing there, I wonder if I could convince people that this part actually has flaws. How dare you criticize Lord Tartakovsky? He is the god among animation! Maybe not. But yeah, like, I know there are some people who would go crazy over the Jack and Ashi romance, but for me, it really doesn't do much. It's honestly one of the weaker parts for me. Alright, but anyways, let's move on to the next question, where Genny was asked if there was something that he wished he could have done more, if there's any little regrets that he would have for season 5. And he said, at the end of the day, we realized the episode, or the entire finale, should have been an hour and a half movie. We still like the episode and how it turned out, but it's one of those things you realize to get the final satisfaction to make the battle as epic as you want it to be. As I said earlier, the best of Jack is a simple idea executed greatly, and this was really 3 episodes in one. It felt a little rush in places, and we kept opening it up in the end to take a breath. And honestly, on that part, I really do understand, because when you do look into the history of Samurai Jack, that was one of the biggest things that Genndy Tartakovsky really wanted to do as a finale, because keep in mind, he didn't just want to do one final season to end off Samurai Jack. Originally, he planned the finale to be an entire movie. That's how he wants to go and kill off Aku. And he legit spent more than a decade to go and find a way to actually create a movie. And that's where he ended up jumping from places to places, from studio to studio. Like, he would ask New Line, he would ask Frederator, he would ask Sony, and he would ask Bad Robot Productions for all of them to see if he can actually make the Samurai Jack movie that he wanted to ultimately conclude the series. And it ultimately never happened. And the only thing he can do is just go to Adult Swim, like, to take a big break from Sony Animation and that entire mess that happened over there, and, you know, to actually make something based on Samurai, you know, to actually do some kind of Samurai Jack revival and to ultimately end off the series, like, just to get that done so that he can move on with his life. And honestly, I do understand the regret. I get it if Genndy still has that part in him that he still wish that he wanted to make the movie that he would love to see. But at least now he did work with the materials that he have in order to craft it. And rather it be a movie or just an entire season, it's honestly fantastic. And I would have been excited for either one of them. But honestly, with the finale that we got, I feel satisfied with it, but I don't blame him if he still has those little regrets. And then we also have another question right over here, which is the way it ended in itself, how he feels about the entire finale in terms of the story. Now, forget about the format of how it's presented. What about the way that it ended itself? And Genndy has stated, I know there was some criticism from those who wanted a happy ending, but there was no way in my mind that it could be purely happy, because that's not a samurai's lot in life. It's bittersweet. Okay, now this is also another problem that I do have with season 5 of Samurai Jack. Now, it's not really the fact that it's bittersweet. You know, I do admire that you want to end it off that way. For me, the problem, It's how it's executed. Again, going back into the problem of the romance angle between Jack and Ashi, this is probably the reason number one why it feels pointless, why it feels like it doesn't have any connection with anything else that's going on in the plot. Because this entire romance angle, it ultimately goes into this stupid ending. Honestly, it's the bitter part that just makes no sense. It feels like the crew is trying to build up this entire romance angle to really to ultimately make it where Ashi ends up dying in a way that it feels ridiculous. Because here's the thing. If you guys don't remember, the moment after Jack would finally kill off Aku, both Jack and Ashi would return to his home, and everybody is happy, and now they decided to go organize a wedding. So they spend days waiting and to have everybody from all around the world to go and see the big wedding between Jack and Ashi. But then, in the middle of the wedding, when the bride marches to go see her groom, Ashi would just fall down. She looks at Jack and says, "Hey, you know what? I just realized something. You killed my dad, right? So technically, that means I shouldn't exist." And then, she's gone. Literally, after like a brief pause moment, like you gotta have an entire time to really set up the wedding, to wait for everybody to come in, only for Ashi to have that realization that she shouldn't even be there in the first place. Okay, that's just stupid. I'm sorry, but that was a little bit ridiculous. Like, if you want to go and do that ending where Ashi disappears because, like, Jack killed off Aku, like, she should have disappeared right at the moment Jack killed off Aku. That should be the moment where she disappeared. But no, you gotta delay that thing. You gotta make it so that it coincidentally happens at Jack's wedding. I mean, come on. That's a little bit ridiculous. Now, granted, even though the bitter part is dumb, I will give it that the sweet aspect, the scene that happened right afterwards, that was well executed. That I actually do like. Where you see Jack, he's sad over Ashi being gone and, like, he can no longer see her again. And then, like, you see the little ladybug, which is kind of like a symbolism of Ashi. And he feels at peace, where he feels happy with himself. And then you do see the scene, like, where you see Jack next to the tree. Now, that scene, honestly, I feel like it's a good way to end it off. That feels very nice. That was good. But it's honestly that stupid wedding that makes no sense. So it's not the fact that it's bittersweet that's the problem. It's mostly the way that it's executed. And also, that really is a problem why the romance angle feels absolutely pointless. I mean, come on! You can do better than this, Genndy. Why do you have to go in a direction that just feels kind of dumb? Okay, but anyway, so that's my little criticism about the end of Samurai Jack, and I know I'm not the only one who thinks that way regarding the ending, because I've talked with some people regarding the ending of Samurai Jack, and yeah, they do feel like it is kind of dumb how it ended as well, and how, like, the whole wedding scene just makes it absolutely nonsensical, seriously. But anyways, let's go on to the final question, and probably the big one that they asked is regarding the future of Samurai Jack. That even though the series is over, would Genndy Tartakovsky consider bringing back Samurai Jack? And this is what he has to say. "I know better than to say never say never. I was watching this Disney documentary, and I'm not Disney, but I was thinking about Mickey Mouse, and he became an icon. Walt moved on to other things, but he made him exist. I was thinking, wow, is Samurai Jack my Mickey Mouse? Am I stupid to stop working on it? Yet at the same time, there was a good story told with Jack, so who knows in the future?" So that's the thing, is that he, like, even though right now he did fully stop Samurai Jack, he is putting it in consideration to bring him back. And if I could put in my personal opinion on this, I feel like Genndy should not. Honestly, we're done with Samurai Jack. I mean, we have seen the finale that we have been waiting for years. I mean, like, it's been 16 years since audiences really want to see Samurai Jack actually go back to the past and destroy Aku to save his family and to save his people. But honestly, bringing him back, it just, doesn't make any sense because, like, at that point, what else do you have? Because the main story of Samurai Jack is legit. Like, you gotta go back to the past and try to destroy Aku. Simple as that. Now that we have seen it, the story should be done. It's over. I mean, we got the complete series of Samurai Jack. Adding in more, I feel like, honestly, you're just trying to keep him alive for no reason. I mean, there are some things you should just stop and leave it be as it is. Even if the TV channels and stuff like that would want you to continue more of it. You know, like, and there are some TV people that, you know, even though they know very well that their TV show is absolutely beloved, they want to stop it at a right point. You know, they got to stop it at the point where it feels like it's the right time to do so, to tell this one big story. I mean, this is exactly why Avatar The Last Airbender and Gravity Falls actually stopped pretty shortly, like after just a few seasons. You know, like, the success is not necessarily measured by how long a TV show can go. It's not like in the veins of The Simpsons or South Park, but the impact that it has and all it wants to do is just tell a really good story. And I feel like that's what Genndy should do with Samurai Jack, you know? He told a great story about a samurai who somehow got stuck in the future, and he should leave it as that. I mean, if Genndy really does need a Mickey Mouse, like if Genndy Tartakovsky really needs to have a Mickey Mouse for his career, then honestly, I think the perfect one should be Dexter's Laboratory. Because that one has more potential to actually bring him back and actually create some more ideas into it. That one feels like you have more of an idea of all the different possibilities what you can do with Dexter. The point of Dexter's Lab is not necessarily to tell this one big story. It's about a concept about a little boy who's more intelligent than any other kid that he would know about, and he has this secret laboratory in his room. Like, it's all based on this concept instead of just telling this entire linear story. So you have more potential to create more ideas with Dexter's Lab. So I'm pretty convinced that, like, if Genndy Tartakovsky would ever decide to finally quit Sony Pictures Animation and reject all the Hotel Transylvania stuff that they would offer him, that he would go to Cartoon Network and ask Cartoon Network if he can go and bring back Dexter's Lab. They'll say absolutely yes, especially nowadays when Cartoon Network really does have an obsession with creating reboots to animated series, especially the fact that they have found major success with shows such as Teen Titans Go, The Powerpuff Girls, and Ben 10. So I can honestly see that happening more. Or in fact, like, when it comes to Genndy Tartakovsky, one thing that people would love to see from him is something original. Or maybe, like, he could also technically go back to Symbionic Titan as well, because he did actually consider that also to bring that back. But honestly, bringing in an original animated series from Genndy Tartakovsky, I think that is something that people would love to see more. I mean, the guy already has a huge fan base, and I can understand that he wouldn't want to go and create something new, create something original, especially how he got really badly treated at Sony Pictures Animation, where he was pretty much not allowed to do anything non-Hotel Transylvania related. Like, they took his ideas for Popeye and Can You Imagine and just ripped them to shreds. And all they did is just tell him, go back to work with Adam Sandler. You have nothing else to do here. And honestly, like, I can imagine, like, yeah, sure, that could probably break his spirits. But if he can move on, if he can just quit Sony and actually do something original, that would honestly be fantastic. That would keep his creative juices flowing instead of just working on properties that he has already created. So honestly, I feel like a better idea would be just to go and do something new or do something else other than Samurai Jack, because at this point, Jack is done. Let's just move on from something else. But yeah, that's pretty much my entire thoughts on it. Not only some of my criticisms towards season 5, but also on the future of Samurai Jack and what they could do. And I will say, however, if there's one way that if Genndy Tartakovsky really wants to do more stories of Samurai Jack, then honestly, don't bring him back as a series. Just bring him back in comics or something like that. That one, like, it's more okay that you can actually do TV shows and stuff like that. So I'm just saying, I'm just saying on that department, if you want to make more Jack, then just do it in comic form. Don't bring him back on television. And on that aspect, just go and think of something new. But yeah, that's my entire talk with Samurai Jack. So yeah, definitely, like, if you guys haven't seen season 5, definitely go ahead and check it out. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about Hayao Miyazaki's next feature film, or as many people would report as his final feature film, which honestly, I'm at the point where I do not believe it anymore. I think any animation fan would actually have that stage where they finally accepted that Hayao Miyazaki is never going to retire. I mean, they say that about freaking Princess Mononoke 20 years ago, so honestly, I don't think I'm gonna buy it anymore. So honestly, if you're gonna tell me that this is going to be the final feature film from Hayao Miyazaki, then that's because he's dead. Alright, but anyways, going back to Hayao Miyazaki and what he has in store for us, apparently, Miyazaki actually revealed the title of what's going to be his next animated feature, and that's basically all that we really know about it so far. So allow me to explain a little bit of what's going on. Going into my source here on Anime News Network, it says that Studio Ghibli director Hayao Miyazaki revealed the title and expected time frame for completion on his latest film. The director expects that it will take 3 to 4 years to complete his movie called Kimi tashi wa do iriku ka? Or, as it's translated in English, How Do You Live? Miyazaki derived the film's title from writer Genzaburo Yoshino's 1937 masterpiece of the same name. He added that this book is a story that has great meaning to the protagonist of his film. Yoshino's book centers around a man named Koperu and his uncle, and through Koperu's spiritual growth, it discusses how to live as human beings. So, that's pretty much all that we know about it so far. It's just regarding the title, and that we could be seeing a release date somewhere between 2020 and 2021. Or, at the latest, maybe 2022. Now, the thing is, originally, Hayao Miyazaki's plan with this movie is that he wanted to go and try to make sure that this movie would be fully complete before the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. But, I mean, we're talking about an animated feature, and those things take time to make, as we all know. So, maybe it could happen, like, at best, it could happen just before it, or maybe we'll see it afterwards, who knows. But we know the time frame is at least going to be at earliest, early 2020. At the latest, maybe early 2022. That's pretty much my guess. But anyways, going back into How Do You Live, I feel like with this title and how he kind of took inspiration from a book, I feel like we could have a little bit of an idea of what this movie could be. And honestly, when it comes to Hayao Miyazaki, you can go in either one of two ways. You can go in the more realistic route, or you can go in the more fantasy route. Now, with the realistic route, you can go somewhere in the veins of like My Neighbor Totoro or The Wind Rises, where it's more based on, or it's more grounded on reality. Where in the fantasy route, you can go in somewhere like Spirited Away, or Howl's Moving Castle, or Ponyo. But the reason why I feel like with How Do You Live, it's going more in the realistic route, because the way Hayao Miyazaki took the title is similar to how he took the title of one of the books, which is Tatsuo Hori's The Wind Has Risen, and used that for his title on The Wind Rises. And on top of that, with The Wind Rises, part of the story is actually loosely based on the book The Wind Has Risen. And honestly, this could be the same thing right over here, because he did state that the book is going to have some importance to the main character. So this could actually be more grounded on reality. And on top of that, we actually do see a poster based on this movie, and we do see just like they say in The Wind Rises, a young Japanese boy just standing there. You know, he's just standing there looking hopeful, and he's wearing the traditional Japanese gown. So, honestly, I feel like Miyazaki could be going somewhere in a more reality-based plot line, more so than something that could be fantasy-oriented. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to see anything fantasy-oriented in this. I mean, who knows? Maybe he could actually do something similar to The Wind Rises, where the main character would actually have a dream where he would meet up with his idol, and we see all these situations where he would be going on top of planes, or he would be like on mountainsides and stuff like that, where he would see his dead loved one. I mean, those fantasy elements could be in there, but I do have a feeling that this movie, How Do You Live, is going in that direction. Now, I could be wrong. Like, maybe this is a full-on fantasy movie. I mean, we barely know anything about this film just yet, so who knows? But at least that is my guess with this film. Maybe Miyazaki is going in that direction, and that's what it could seem like. But then again, maybe he has an entirely different idea on his own. But yeah, so far, there really isn't much else to report. All we know is that now we have a title of it. It's called How Do You Live? And in terms of the release date, well, your guess is as good as mine. We can go either in 2020 at the earliest or 2022 at the latest. And now it is time that we shall go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And this week, believe it or not, guys, I have an exclusive story to report. Now, this is actually something that I actually made a self-discovery upon this. But I will give you guys a little bit of a warning. This could actually fit more in the category of rumors. Nothing has been 100% confirmed, but this is honestly something that I really gotta ask. And this is regarding their upcoming lineup of Blu-rays and DVDs. Because honestly, this is something I gotta ask, what the fridge is Disney up to? Now, beforehand, let me go and tell you guys a little bit of a story of what happened this week that led me to this story that I want to tell you guys. Okay, so I actually got an early release of the Cars 3 Blu-ray, thanks to Filmbook and Disney, for me to go and review, which if you go on filmbook.com, you can actually go and find the review on that website. But anyways, going back to this Cars 3 Blu-ray, my job was basically to go and check out all the bonus features and all the stuff that it has to offer just to go and make my review. So I was also checking out some of the trailers that they got, and one of them that they have is actually a trailer for the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Not of any specific movie, but just for that collection in itself. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Walt Disney Signature Collection is the new round of Blu-rays that Disney is making by re-releasing their classics. So far, Disney has already gotten Pinocchio, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Bambi, Beauty and the Beast, and The Lion King released on Blu-ray as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. Now, they have done these rounds a few times before. The first major one was with the Platinum Edition, and then afterwards, for the first time on Blu-ray, when Blu-ray was fresh and new, they were doing the Diamond Edition, and now they're doing this again with the Walt Disney Signature Collection. So that's the current thing that they are doing. And interestingly enough, they actually showed not only just the movies that they have released on Blu-ray, but also the Disney classics that are going to be a part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. And in terms of the upcoming lineup that they have, well, it's not really that surprising. If you look at the previous lineup of what they released in the Platinum Edition and in the Diamond Edition, it's pretty much going to be the same thing. So not only did Disney show clips from Snow White, Pinocchio, Bambi, Beauty and the Beast, and The Lion King, but they also showed clips of Cinderella, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, 101 Dalmatians, The Jungle Book, The Little Mermaid, and Aladdin. So you can guarantee that in the future, you will see those movies be released as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. But then there is one that I saw. There is one little clip that they showed for a few seconds, pretty much in the same time frame as these other movies, that was never a part of the Platinum Edition or the Diamond Edition. They actually showed a clip of Fantasia. Specifically, in that commercial, they actually showed a clip of possibly the most famous scene in the movie, where you see Sorcerer Mickey in The Sorcerer's Apprentice, where he's dreaming that he's on the mountaintop and he's controlling the waves. If you have seen the movie, or if you know Disney, if you know animation, then you know exactly which scene that I'm talking about. But yeah, they actually showed a clip from Fantasia in the entire commercial of the Walt Disney Signature Collection, which really does make me go and ask the question, is Disney going to release Fantasia on Blu-ray as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection? Did they decide to add Fantasia onto the Signature Collection? You know, honestly, that's what I want to know. Like, what is Disney planning with it? Did they decide to go and add that in? I really don't know. But it does make sense when you think about it, because honestly, it's been 7 years since Disney actually released Fantasia on home media of any kind. And plus the fact that Fantasia has yet to have a digital version. So it is going to be time soon that Disney is going to bring that out. Because last time that Disney did release Fantasia on Blu-ray or any sort of home media was actually back in 2010 with the two-disc movie collection, where you actually get to own Fantasia and Fantasia 2000. And the biggest thing that they advertise in there is that among the bonus features, you can actually go and check out the 2003 animated short Destino, which was originally a project that was supposed to be the collaborative work of Walt Disney and Salvador Dali. And on top of that, they even included a feature-length documentary that would discuss about the making of this animated short. And even back in the day when Walt Disney and Salvador Dali decided to work together on this project. Now, I will say, though, that in terms of the other bonus features and stuff like that, it really doesn't leave much to the imagination. Honestly, this is one of the weaker home media releases of Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, so it's not necessarily the best. But if you guys want to know what is the best home media of Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, well, that is actually the legend that is known as the Legacy Collection. Now, this was a real work of art, almost as much as Fantasia itself. And what it was is actually you get this giant collection set of three DVDs where you actually got the movie itself, you got Fantasia, you also got Fantasia 2000, and then you got a bonus disc filled with plenty of other extras. And honestly, I would love to see Disney go and do that. If they are planning to re-release Fantasia on Blu-ray, then maybe they could have something like the Legacy Collection, where we would know, like, the whole history of the making of Fantasia and what they were planning for Fantasia 2000. And maybe, like, even some information regarding the canceled project on the third Fantasia movie, what it was supposed to be with, I believe, Fantasia 2006. So maybe we can look into that entire history right over there. But are they going to do that soon? And is it going to be a part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection? Because it does make sense, considering that Fantasia is pretty much ready to get another re-release and to get it out on digital HD, because that's one of the biggest purposes of these of the Walt Disney Signature Collection in general. It's not only to re-release it on home media on Blu-ray and DVD, but to also give out a digital HD version of these classics. So eventually Fantasia is going to have one as well. But rather it be a part of the Signature Collection, I don't know. But honestly, after seeing that little commercial, it really does beg the question. I really want to get this out there. I really want to know, is Disney planning to re-release Fantasia as part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection? And if they are they going to package it together with Fantasia 2000? Are they going to make, like, another combo pack in the veins of the Blu-ray or even the Legacy Collection? Or are they going to sell them individually? Who knows what's going to go, but honestly, I really got to bring out this rumor. We got to know. Disney, what are you doing with Fantasia for the next Blu-ray release? I know pretty soon you're going to get another one, so what are you going to do? And honestly, I'm just going to leave it off right over there. You can tell me what you guys think, if Disney is going to be doing that, if there actually is going to be a future Blu-ray release of Fantasia, and if it's going to be a part of the Walt Disney Signature Collection. And that will pretty much be it that I got for you guys this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go ahead and find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and rate and review this episode? And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!